is...
That's so dumb.
Velger.
Oh, you idiot.
Nass.
Holy crap.
Velger and Nass.
I hate that.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
From the 40-yard line, first down and 10. Rams at the Kansas City 40. Five in the Kansas City secondary. Shotgun snap. It goes to Goff. He throws a line drive down the near side over the shoulder. Catch at the 15, the 10, the 5. It's a touchdown. It's a touchdown. Gerald Everett, the tight end. The Rams have taken the lead. 1:49 to go.
And those would end up being the final points in what was a truly amazing Monday Night Football game. What was the final? 54-51?
54-51. I was just counting. There were 14 touchdowns in that game last night. 14 touchdowns. Isn't that ridiculous?
Okay, it was the highest rated Monday Night game in like 4 years, blah, blah, blah. Huge ratings. 54-51, most points ever on Monday Night Football. I think it was the third or fourth highest scoring game in NFL history. Did you like the game, Maz?
I was entertained by it, extremely.
Which
was
not saying that you liked it.
Well, no. Last night's game I found entertaining and I liked it. Would I like it all the time? No. And so this to me is like, I like defense. I like resistance. To me, the offense means less if you can't stop it. And that's what it felt like last night. So over time, I told you, generally speaking, I like defense. I don't love the arena ball. I've been consistent about this since we came on the air. Like, to me, the offense loses some of the flash if there's no one that can stop it. Like, what's the point of that?
Well, I'm typically with you because Super Bowl 52, and I said this the day after when we were back, whatever it was, even if the Patriots won, I hate that game because you really only had one defensive play that factored into the game and ultimately cost the Patriots the win. But that was a ping pong game, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, nonstop offense. You had big defensive plays in this last night, especially on the Rams side. Sure, they gave up 6 touchdowns, and Pat Mahomes went off. But Aaron Donald and that Ebenezer Ekubam, or whatever the hell his name is, Samson Ekubam, he made, you know, huge plays that factored in. Defense factored into this game last night. It did. That's the false narrative that's making me crazy with people that look at this and say, "Bech, I hate what the way the NFL is turning into." Well, this is what it is. They've watered the game down. Defense is being taken away. They've changed the rules. So open it up, make it entertaining. But defense did factor in. It did.
So defensive plays did. But let me ask you this. I was just checking some of this stuff out. How many 3-and-outs were there in that game last night?
Probably 2.
0.
Oh, okay.
Zip. So there were 7 punts, and there were 3 defensive touchdowns. There wasn't a single 3-and-out in the whole game. Not one. And so this is sort of my point. At no point do you feel like somebody's defense started to control the game. The only defensive plays that happened were scoring plays that were quick strikes, but they were never the defense taking control of the tempo or the game. That never happened. And so I like the idea of being able to win in different ways. And last night, the only way we were going to win was to outscore the other team.
Okay, so I'm sort of with you. I would not want the league to become that. I would not want the league to become that. But as an outlier kind of game, fabulous, tremendous, great night. And if you didn't enjoy that, then you just don't enjoy sports or anything, really. I mean, now, if that's what the game became, I would have a problem. I don't want the game to become that. I don't want the game to become that any more than I want the game to be 10-7. 6-3. I don't need those games either. Every once in a while, I'll take it. But as an outlier sort of thing, no problem. The issue and the problem is the game becoming that? Is the game becoming that? Greg Bedard, who was in earlier, thinks it is. We grabbed a cut from his first segment. This might be a little long. I may cut it. I don't know. But Bedard sort of went off on this game and, you know, what the pro game is becoming. Here's the big boy.
Last night was the NCAA came to the NFL. That was the WAC. That was the Pac-10. And look, this is like when Oregon and all of a sudden those teams popped up on the scene and it was a revelation. Everybody's like, oh, this is cool. You got to watch this. It was good once in a while in a few places. Now suddenly every game on Saturdays is 65-55. They run 200 combined plays. The games take like 4.5 hours. Like, you think you have a problem with baseball pace of play? Wait till these games.
Okay, but in the college game, I've never sat and watched a football game and said, this is taking too long. Ever. Even ones that last. And the college games take a long time. There's no question about
it. Without Alabama, watch one of these other games.
I know, I do. I watch Wisconsin.
Well,
not Wisconsin. Come on.
There's no shortage of action in a game like last night. You know, there was a constant action, so I didn't feel like the game was all that long either.
I understand what you're saying, though, Greg, but I've never felt a four-hour football game like I feel a four-hour baseball game.
Every time. I hate college football. I can't watch college football anymore. I can't. It's because of that. It's just every play's the same. You know, they're spreading the field. They're throwing to the open guy. Or they're running little hitches or reverses. Every play is the same. It turns into it's basketball on grass. And this is what last night, I think, was the point of no return for the NFL, that this is coming. Now you might as well bring Lincoln Riley and everybody else to the NFL, because this is the way it's going. And what it turns into is everyone is a pass rusher or a cornerback, a wide receiver or a quarterback. That's it. That's the game.
Okay, this is the college game, and now it's becoming the pro game. Do you agree with that? And if that's the case, how do you feel about it?
Yes, I do agree with that. Yeah, loosely. And again, because I think the game's getting wide open. I say arena ball versus the college game, but that's what it is, and I don't love it. Because to me, it takes the power out of the game. And I still like the idea of a team like Jacksonville coming into Foxborough last year without a high-flying passing attack, but playing good defense and being, you know, a physical running game that they can use to then throw the ball, you know, efficiently, et cetera. Like, there's strategy there. And they can overpower you. There's a different way that they can beat you. This is flag football. That's what that was. And listen, last night I enjoyed it. Like everybody, I was glued to it. I'm not telling you I turned it off and said, screw this. But week in and week out, like I never felt like a defense had a chance last night.
Yeah, I've been with you, but I've accepted it. Again, they've changed the rules so much that this is what it's become. And it's about trying to get, you know, guys with speed and open space. And I like college football, so frankly, I have no problem with it, as long as it's entertaining.
Okay, so your thoughts on the game, meaning the game itself and the game, the NFL, and if that's the direction, how do you feel about it? Are the Patriots equipped to play a game like that? Let me answer. On a clean turf, on a beautiful South California night, or in a dome, they'd be in some trouble against those teams. The thing is, and they may run into the Chiefs in the playoffs, it's going to be 12 degrees, whether it's in Kansas City or here. Maybe with wind, maybe with wintry conditions. And Kansas City ain't scoring 51 in the middle of January. I don't care how bad the Patriots defense is. They're not going to have that kind of game. So the weather's going to mitigate it for the Patriots. Now, when you get to the Super Bowl and it's the Rams or the Saints, now we'll have a different conversation, and the Pats are going to have to figure out how to score 40. But in the playoffs, I think they can get by. But they can't. They don't have the speed or the explosiveness of these teams anymore. They just don't.
Not those two offenses last night.
They don't.
I mean, those teams are off the charts. And New Orleans is right there with them, by the way. New Orleans is another one. New Orleans is averaging almost 38 points a game.
But if everyone's healthy and it's clicking, offensively, they can hang with them. But
yeah, they can get in the 30s.
Yep. But I'll say what I said earlier. I don't think the Patriots have any defensive-type players like D. Ford or Donald or this linebacker that they have with the Rams, Samson Ekubam, that can make those kind of impactful plays like those guys did last night. Maybe Trey Flowers? Maybe.
So the other thing that stood out to me is the Chiefs, both good and bad. Like, there's some resilience there that there haven't been in the past. They got down throughout the game, and it didn't faze Mahomes, and they just came right back every time. They were down 13 points to start the game. They were down 10 points in the fourth quarter. Mahomes gets strip sacked, touchdown late in the game that you think, well, there's the ball game. Nope, they come back, immediately score a touchdown, then take the lead, and, like, they kept coming back, which I was impressed with. But then they turned into the Chiefs in the last 5 minutes or so and got real tight, real choky. The clock management, again, just comes up time and again with Andy Reid. Their last possession where they scored a touchdown, I mean their last scoring possession, they were driving deep into Rams territory. They were clearly now in field goal range, just outside the red zone, then just in the red zone. And there was about 4 minutes left, now 3 minutes left. And they really could have committed to bleeding clock there. The Rams had burned timeouts. The Rams only had one timeout left. And if Andy Reid really wanted to do it, he could have bled that clock inside of 2 minutes, inside of a minute, really, and gotten to a point where he's throwing into the end zone to win or kicking the field goal to tie and leaving the Rams with nothing on the clock. Except it never entered his mind, because Mahomes kept snapping the ball at 10 to 15 seconds left on the play clock. And there was even one play I remember that I noted, the guy ran out of bounds with 3 minutes left to stop the clock. It's like, and it never occurred to them that if they just managed it smartly there, they could have gotten the game down to zero and had the ball in their hands to end the game like a basketball game, like Bedard said. Never did. And then their last possession, after Tyreek Hill stupidly takes the ball out of the end zone on that punt, They start on their 12, but they have 50 seconds left and one timeout, which really, given that game, was time. And they fitted that away so quickly, it made your head spin. Next thing I know, I look up and it's 24 seconds left and he's chucking it 40 yards down the field.
With no timeouts.
With no timeouts. It's like, how did that happen?
Right.
You just started with 50 seconds left and a timeout and now you're...
It felt like so much time.
Now it's like, how did you kill all that time? You didn't even do anything. But leave it to Andy Reid. It's just there's no feel for the end of the games with Andy Reid. And you mentioned before that Mahomes is a little Favreian, loose with the ball. He's a gunslinger, so he'll give it up. Travis Kelce started dropping balls.
Yep.
Hill gets stupid on punt returns, and it's like, ooh, they still have the Chiefs' DNA in them, Murray. Still have that Chiefs' DNA.
Yeah, as impressive as I was with them, I came away thinking they're going to screw up somehow in January. They always do.
And if you get KC in a January game and you're close and late, I don't know if KC's totally flushed this out of their system. That's still Andy Reid, and those are still the Chiefs. And they got to prove to me that they can come through in those situations before I take them totally seriously.
Yeah, so look, you're not going to hear me defend the Chiefs on that one. I was wrong earlier, by the way. That Kelce drop, that was a three and out. That was the only three and out of the game.
I thought there was one.
Yeah, okay. But it took a receiver to a tight end to drop a pass that hit him right in the hands.
Okay, so those are our game thoughts. I might mix that in with the Celtics. Bedard had one more takeaway as it relates to the Patriots. One more Patriots takeaway as it relates to last night. You'll hear that when we come back, and then I promise, right to your phones.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bored my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Their lack of drafting at wide receiver, and we'll get into this probably with the current piece, you know, is they don't have anybody. They had to go get Josh Gordon, you know, a couple months out of rehab because they can't draft any wide receivers ever. And all these other teams can, and they can go 80-yard touchdowns here and there. Why can't the Patriots do that?
Why?
Well, I do think part of it is Brady, but now, considering the guys that they do draft, none of them do anything in the NFL tells you they're terrible at identifying and ranking and assessing wide receivers. I mean, terrible.
That's Bedard on the Patriots in the receiver position. What the jumping off point again was last night, because the Cup kid, what's his first name? Cooper Cup, that receiver that got hurt with the Rams. He was like their, I don't know if he was their number one, or he was one of their big receivers.
Yeah. Basically their slot guy.
One of their important guys there to Goff.
He's like their Edelman.
Yeah.
He goes out and they still put up 54.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you didn't even notice it, because not only do they have Brandon Cooks, but you know, as Bedard was pointing out, these guys you never heard of come from deep off their depth chart, 6'3", and can run like the wind, and the next thing you know, they're scoring multiple touchdowns and putting up 54 points. And he's like, if you're a Patriots fan, you watch and go, where'd all these guys come from? We've been watching this team for 18 years, and they haven't drafted a single guy like that.
He's right.
So there's his point on the Patriots and the receivers.
I mean, it is. It's frustrating because it feels like it's easier to throw the ball in that league now than ever before. And I was good, like, instinctively, I was going to say, well, they never draft burners per se, but that's not true. They do. They draft some burners. Chad Jackson, in theory, was supposed to be one, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going back a ways now.
Yes, you are.
But there were a couple of others in there, like, you know, Bethel Johnson, Price, Taylor Price, was that his name? Whatever. Like, but they drafted a few of those guys along the way. And it just feels like they suck at it. I think that's a Belichick flaw. To me, that's what that is. Belichick is one of these guys that loves to coach people up and thinks that the talent level between player A and player B is very minimal.
Exactly.
Yeah, that position, I mean, they have whiffed on. And, they, you know, I've had my eyes on the two guys in between Sony Michel and Isaiah Wynn, and DJ Moore, who Carolina drafted, is iffy, but... That Calvin Ridley that the Falcons took, that kid's a stud. 7 touchdowns already. Like, come on. Like, how do you miss on that?
Because the great receivers are almost always great athletes, right? And Bill almost seems to frown on athleticism. You know, like, because it somehow gives the player power that you then have to, you know, you then have to succumb or kneel to his ability. And so, I'm sorry, I always go back to that story of when Dimitroff, the general manager of the Falcons, was going to draft Julio Jones and asked Bill whether he should trade up to get him. And Bill said, no, you can draft Jonathan Baldwin at 28 and get the same player. What a load of crap. Holy, like, think of the arrogance of that comment. You could draft Jonathan Baldwin and have Julio Jones.
Okay, so there's the football stuff mixing in with the Celtics stuff. Andy in Dorchester, back to the C's. Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, I wanted to, you guys kind of caught me off guard. I want to know what you guys think about the Celtics using the same lineup that got them to the Eastern Conference Finals and Kyrie Irving more of a sixth man, like Manu Ginobili.
Okay. Maz, how do you feel about Kyrie Irving back to the bench and use Terry Rozier in the starting lineup just like they used to get to the East Finals last year?
No. I'd put Terry Rozier on the bench and play Kyrie Irving. Like, see, this is where it gets stupid. So if you want fewer stars on the floor, then take the lesser star off the floor. There's no issue with Kyrie. You knew exactly what he was when you were getting him.
Okay.
And you don't beat Toronto without him.
From one really bad comment to the next. Ben, I'm going to give you 10 seconds. Go. His comment line says, we should go get J.R. Smith. Thank God he didn't make it onto the air. Thank you. Michael in Dartmouth on the Celts. Go, Michael.
Yeah, guys, I think I know a lineup that's going to be perfect. I think Bane should be starting every single night. I think Marcus Smart should be starting every single night. I think Brown and Hayward should both be on the bench right now until Hayward gets back in the moment of things, you know, from the injury. And Brown, I feel like it's like a little competition. Brown, like, thinks, like you're saying, he's young. He thinks he's going to be the next guy. But he's, like, competing with Hayward. But if they're both on the bench, that takes that away from it. And, you know, and I think they'll have scoring off the bench, playmaking off the bench with Hayward, and everything will work out.
Okay. I don't know if you have too many grinders in there now, but Stevens did say after the game that he's going to be doing more tinkering here coming up. Mm-hmm. So last night, Baines was in, Hayward was out. Now what? What's next?
Good question. I'd put Smart in there. I mean, I don't know who you take out. I'd have to think that one out. Probably Brown. I mean, he'd be the guy I'd take out of there. Baines should only start when there's a reason to start him.
Right,
by the
exactly,
way.
When there's another moose in the
yes,
line.
Yes, that's it. That's what you did during the playoffs last year. When you have a matchup, then you start Baines. If you're playing the Sixers, you start Baines. If not, you don't. That's it.
We've got Carlos and Bill Ricca. Go ahead, Carlos.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. The reason I call is a Boston Celtic. I'm fan from Celtic for more than 49 years. It's depressing, look, the team. I think, it's my personal opinion, the coach lost his hand. A coach is a college coach.
Yep.
Now he's got a professional. They got the young guys. They played last year fantastic. And now he's trying to get Hayward, which takes God he get okay. But he's not the same guy. He's not the same guy.
So, Carlos, what you got here is a college coach trying to coach a real NBA team now. And he's finding his way. I agree. Now, I'm not going to do what Kylan Randolph says. Kylan Randolph, what do you say about Brad Stevens?
To follow up that, I think they should fire Brad Stevens.
Okay, I'm going to let you go just with that.
It is good to hear that people are finally pissed, though.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not firing Brad Stevens. That's dumb. However, let's just be objective. He's finding his way. He's trying to figure it out. He came from college and had a very college-minded team here for the first several years, and now he's got a real NBA team with real NBA problems that come along with a lot of talent, and he's got to figure it out.
I mean, he's always had the control, right? In college, it's all about the coach.
And last year with Brown and Tatum, they're malleable. They're easy to work with.
Absolutely.
Especially when they find themselves getting more minutes. Now, with the expectations, the egos get bigger, and now he realized, wow, I got a whole room full of egos I got to deal with.
The Hayward one to me is sort of it in a nutshell. That's his guy. That's the one he picked up from the airport in the Prius, as Murray would say. He ain't ready. He's not ready. Yet he's the big free agent signing with the big money contract and the cartoon commercial and the Instagram story and massively interested in his brand. You add that all up and the coach has to make a hard decision. He's got to tell Gordon, you're not ready. We're going to really manage you here. And he's reluctant. He took him out of the starting lineup, but then played him 31 minutes last night and played him down the stretch when he was off, when he was just off all night. So it's like, Stevens wants to pull the trigger but is a little afraid to really go all the way in with it. And that, you know, to me, that's in a nutshell. Jim in Rhode Island wants to weigh in on something we talked about like 3 hours ago in one of our 10 questions. I asked, who do you want to be the next quarterback of the New England Patriots? Bedard said Marcus Mariota. Maz said Carson Wentz, which is unrealistic. It's got to be real. You have to have a chance at this player.
Well, then you need to clarify the question.
Okay. Realistically, who would you want them to take a chance on? Mariota. Who'd you say, Murray?
I said C.J. Beathard. The Niners owe you one.
And I said Blake Bortles.
I'd go A.J. McCarron then if you want a realistic one, but next time be more precise with the question.
Jim in Rhode Island wants to weigh in. Go, Jim.
Thank you, fellas. Thank you for finally acknowledging me. 2 years ago, I called you and said that the Patriots should go after Blake Bortles. This guy, with the proper coaching and consistent coaching, could have endless bomb. And finally, you said it today. Okay. If this guy was here 2 years ago, he'd be primed for the spot.
Okay, Jim. Thanks for giving me the idea. I knew it came from somewhere. Look, Blake Bortles sucks, but I think coaching is such a huge element in the development of these quarterbacks. So who was he given? He came into the world with Gus Bradley? Who was the coach there when he first
took it was Gus Bradley,
And now
it was like the worst winning percentage in NFL history other than Hugh Jackson.
And now it's, you know, Mr. Urgency Doug Marrone. Like, you have no chance when that's how you come into the world. And even given that, we've seen flashes. Bill loved him, reportedly. Their quarterback draft board that year had Bortles 1, Garoppolo 2. So they liked Bortles more than Garoppolo. Bortles went in the top 5 or whatever it was, so not like they would have got to have a crack at him. But give him the real coaching? Bill saw something in him to begin with? I don't know. You could get him, I think. I think he's almost done in Jacksonville. So that I don't know. That's who I said.
Well, when they had a good game plan in a couple of playoff games and the regular season game against the Patriots, he actually looked pretty good, didn't he?
Yeah.
But I still think he sucks. Okay. I disagree with the caller. I think Bortles blows.
We've got Murray's update right here, and then we're back with one final segment of your wonderful phone calls.
Sports Hub headlines.
Red Sox lefty David Price today named the recipient of the American League Comeback Player of the Year Award. The National League Atlanta Braves pitcher Johnny Ventures took it. Red Sox also acquired reliever Colton Brewer from the San Diego Padres today for minor league infielder Esteban Quiroz. After 21 seasons and over 3,000 hits and most of his time with the Texas Rangers, but a cup of coffee with the Red Sox as well, third baseman Adrian Beltre announced his retirement today. Bruins formally announced that forward Patrice Bergeron sustained a rib and shoulder injury. That's what that upper body injury is, rib and shoulder. He sustained that during the second period of the Bruins-Stars game last Friday in Dallas. So now Bergeron going to be reevaluated in about a month. Bruins back on the ice tomorrow when they're in Detroit to take on the Red Wings. Celtics lost to the Hornets last night, 117-112. Other news throughout the NBA, the drama continues as J.R. Smith and the Cavaliers mutually agreed for him to leave the team as both sides work to find a trade. The NBA fined Warriors Kevin Durant $25,000 for cursing at a fan during the Warriors' recent loss to the Mavericks. And 76ers second-year guard Markel Fultz out until he sees a shoulder specialist at some point next week. Headlines are brought to you by Hooters, where the food is hot, the beer is cold, and the game is on. Find them in Saugus, Denham, West Springfield, and on Route 9 in Shrewsbury. Hooters makes you happy. I'm Jim Murray for Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 Sports Hub. Next update, 30 minutes.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Tom, do you believe this is a championship team? You've been in the Super Bowl 3 of the last 4 years, and you've won 2 of them. Do you believe this team can rise to that level, or is there not enough here?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of good teams, and the best teams now start to take the leap forward. And, you know, we have to go do it. It's one thing to say it. This is what we can do, is what we should be. And it's another to go do it, which is, I've always been of the belief, well done is better than well said. So we've got a great opportunity. We're first place in our division, and what will become of this season will be determined by how we play and prepare moving forward. Some teams this time of year lose a lot of discipline. They lose commitment. They lose effort. They lose willingness. You know, our team has always been one that's kind of ascended, and I hope that's what this team's all about.
Jim Gray, oh, you heard it. He still sees them as a Super Bowl team, potentially.
So, yeah. I don't know how much I buy that. I mean, he knows.
You know, I'm with Murray. Go ahead, Murray. Go. The same thought was just popping into my head. Go.
Hold on. Yeah. Well, wait a minute.
It just
wait
sounded like a lot of lip service, too.
It did?
Yeah. I mean, he just the body language, too, and how he played in this last game. I just I wish Jim Gray asked that question a little bit more honestly, rather than the way he, you know, something. You know, Tom, this year's Patriots team looks like a steaming pile of crap, comparatively speaking, to the other teams you've played on. Tom, do you think it's a stinky pile of deuce?
Well, yeah. It is true. He starts every question with Tom. Like, just play that again, Billy. This is the one we played as the rejoin, if you don't mind. It's like a crutch.
Tom.
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 Tom. Tom, it's a week off for you this week, it being the bye week. You know, your coach usually tries to stress there's no days off. But, Tom, considering how you hate his guts, are you going to tell him to F off rather than have no days off?
Tom, do you believe this is the championship team?
Go ahead. Let me hear it again.
Tom, do you believe this is the championship team? You've been in the Super Bowl 3 of the last 4 years, and you've won 2 of them. Do you believe this team can rise to that level, or is there not enough here?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of good teams, and the best teams now start to take the leap forward. And, you know, we have to go do it. It's one thing to say it. This is what we can do. This is what we should be. And it's another to go do it, which is I've always been of the belief well done is better than well said.
Okay, so you just think he's giving it lip service.
Yeah, I do. I don't think he believes in this team. I don't. I'm with Murray.
Like, I think he would mention strengths, specific strengths about the team. Instead, it's just he turns into a cliche monster. And I know he is, want to do that anyway, but still.
He's become a massive cliche monster. Like, just you talk like a human being, dude. I mean, that's okay. I mean, it's better to do that than say the wrong thing, I suppose. But the Jim Gray thing, like, Tom, go ahead.
Tom, it's a week off, but is it really a week off? Are you just sitting around doing nothing, or are you working?
Yeah, definitely not. Yeah, it's Tom, actually like, a lot of...
Why is it always Tom?
Tom.
Tom, you just sitting around playing pocket pool, or are you going to go out and actually work this week?
It's a 20-minute interview. He's got him one-on-one every week. Like, okay, it's Tom. I got it.
Tom.
Is it Tom? Tom.
Tom.
God. Mike. I find 95% of what Brady says to be completely useless. 95%. Seriously. Every once in a while, he gives you, what defense are we in that Malcolm isn't on the field? Like, you'll get one of those. But, I find him useless 95% of the time.
Tom, what's your favorite part of the turkey? I like the skin when it comes out of the oven and it's brown and succulent. Kind of like your rump when I saw you sunning in Italy a few years back, Tom. Tom?
Crispy.
All right, wrap it up with your phones here. Alex and Groton on the Celts. Hi, Alex.
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
Good. What do you got?
So, I think the biggest problem with the Celtics right now is Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward, in my personal opinion. Jaylen Brown isn't putting up the numbers he was last year. In my personal opinion, I believe that you should just take him out, put Marcus Martin, take out Hayward, and put Morris in. Morris is a reliable player, plays the ball well, and it will fit perfectly well with Kyrie.
Okay, so I think Marcus Morris is another one to consider. Absolutely. He's got good offensive game. He has a little more toughness, length, the whole thing. And I would agree, if you start with, like, the individual problems, Brown, Hayward, Rozier. Like, those are the three guys I look at.
Sure.
And I know Tatum's on your list as well, but I start with those three.
I like Morris off the bench. I just think he's your classic bench scorer. Click. Get it, shoot it, score. That's it. That's pretty much all he does. So, and you only need one of him and Smart in the starting lineup. Just one of them. That's all. And then let Hayward run the second unit. That's where I would go.
Bob and Medway. Go ahead, Bob. What do you got on the Pats?
Hey, I just want to give you a theory on why the Patriots are having problems drafting wide receivers. The way I see it is, I think they've basically given up on it because Brady can't reach him anymore. The days of Moss and the deep passing game were, 10 years ago? Last year they gave him Cooks. He couldn't reach the guy. It's just
I just don't see where they've decided to go with hybrid running backs, tight ends, and slot receivers.
Okay,
and so every other team in the league drafts these, you know, no-name or big-name wide receivers that turn out to be deep ball threats. When was the last time we saw one besides Moss?
Okay, so I don't care about the deep ball threat. I want another intermediate threat. And that's why I just dislike Gordon. I feel like he's just a home run hitter, even though he runs the slant. But, you know, you don't really work Josh Gordon down the field, do you? I want more of those guys. And I think that they had it in their mind that Cooks would be that guy last year, but he's not. He's just more of a vertical guy.
Totally. So, or at least the way they used him anyway.
I mean, yeah, I don't care about the top off the defense because I think Brady can stretch the field sideways just fine if he has enough options. And
Gordon's hands aren't good enough to be that reliable guy down the field.
I just don't think he's quick enough. I think he's fast, not quick. Right?
I'm not even sure he's fast.
Not anymore. Maybe not. Maybe not. Or if he's in shape. Chris in the car on the Celtics. Hi, Chris.
Hey, yeah. How you doing, guys? So I think the Celtics, the problem, I think they have too many guys the same size trying to do the same things. And I think Stevens is having a really hard time trying to disassociate what these guys are trying to do and having a problem doing that. I think, you know, another caller said maybe bench Hayward and Brown. They have a lot of depth on the bench. Trade those guys and get a big guy to add a little bit of depth, a little bit of something else on that team.
Okay, they're not trading Hayward after doing this. And trading Brown now, I don't know. It's like you're selling low now on these guys. Is that the answer, man? Should they trade these guys now?
No. Look, eventually, somewhere down the road, they're going to have to make a move, okay? So, you know, if you were to say to me who you're going to trade, I'll give you names. But to me, you know what the problem is?
Well,
people keep talking about the starting lineup and everything else. The problem is their attitude. Their attitude sucks because the offense can only run through one guy at a time. When you have five guys on the floor, the offense has to start somewhere. Okay, so it's got to start with one guy, and then everybody else becomes a bit part to some degree. And none of them want to be the bit part. They all think they're the guy the offense should run through. Whether it's Brown, or whether it's Tatum, or whether it's Hayward, the offense runs through Kyrie. Like, and then after that, they can, you know, but until those guys are willing to accept the reality that they're going to have to contribute to the team in other ways than points, it's not going to change. Like, they all think that they're going to score 20 points, and they're not. It's just not going to be that way anymore. And it worked last year because Kyrie and Hayward were out. So Tatum and Brown got their points. It's their attitude.
So
the attitude has to change.
If the players don't change their attitude, if they don't get it, what do?
You got to sit some of them until their attitude does change. Because otherwise, they're never going to hit their ceiling. If they don't play together, it's not going
to
work.
Way too early to start trading pieces. Way to solve this problem. The first, you see if they... if they can pull themselves out of it. Eventually, Maz is right. You have to trade guys because of contracts, or else, you know, Wick is going to be stuck with a record luxury tax, like just a stupid payroll. You can't pay all these guys max contracts. So that's going to come. This thing, look, I'm happy to overreact after 17 games, but it is 17 games.
Still, I find this refreshing. At least it's not all puppy dogs and rainbows and everything's going to be fine, guys.
Well, this is true.
I mean, we got a fire Brad Stevens call today. It was actually kind of great.
When you have a roster like this, everybody's got to give up some shots. All have to give up shots.
Tommy and Dartmouth on the Pats. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, guys. So I was just calling to say that I've always been one of these in the foxhole Tom Brady supporters, no matter what. But the bottom line is, the minute that he didn't follow through with his work routine, as he always has, he just doesn't have the physical traits to do that kind of stuff. He has to always stay on his game. And that's what we're seeing right here. We're just seeing the fact that he's an older quarterback. He didn't go through his regular regimen, and now it's affecting his play on the field. And honestly, unfortunately, he's not the best anymore. And that's what it comes down to. I'll be the first to defend him, but at this point, he's just not the best anymore. We need to make contingency plans moving forward.
Okay, it's just the second part I disagree with. He's taken a step back this year, and I think what he put into it is a factor. I agree with that part 100%. 100%. He's put less into it, so he's getting less out of it. Simple as that. Physics. Math. Okay? That's what's happened. If he goes back to putting everything back into it, he'll be great again. And I believe that. Or he better be, because then you really screwed the pooch by trading Garoppolo. So that's what I'm going under. The contingency plans, I would love to have a young guy here to start to develop. Love it. I think that's the best model. You nailed it with Garoppolo, and Brady just outlasted it. But I still think that's the model. Get a guy in here now, get him in the book, get him in the coaching, get him in the system, and then in 2 or 3 years, he's your guy. So I'm happy to do that. But I'm not making contingency plans for next year or the year after that, like real contingency plans, because that's Brady. He's got to get his ass back in gear. That's my approach if I'm the Patriots.
Yeah, that's where you are. Where I am is pretty much at the screwed the pooch part. I think they screwed the pooch.
Coming up next, the final word, which has a new, fresh Fuppets that is not to be missed either on the radio or TV side. So do not go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome. Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Mass's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The callers bringing knowledge to the table.
Mass, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, there is only one place to go, Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. No one. So the fresh Fuppets that were put together by Hardy that we ran already today, but
let's do it again.
Need it again.
Let's do it again. Bedard makes his debut in the Fuppets. Bedard has a seat at the table here. If you're watching on NBC Sports Boston, you'll see the Fuppets in all of its glory. Oh, maybe not, because we have a new sponsor on the simulcast side that X's
right.
out that screen, so you may not see it. It may just... Oh, it will be okay. It'll be on the simulcast. Fine, good. If you're listening on the radio, it's an audio piece as well. It'll make perfect sense to you. Show the full idiocy of me, really, with the Felger and Mass program. How angry Jimmy Stewart gets. That really comes through in this piece as well. If you want to see it with all the audio and video attached, go to our Facebook page, our Twitter page, etc., etc. A fresh edition of the Fuppets brought to you by Hardy. Roll it.
They're going to win at the Jets. The Jets won't beat them. But at Miami and at Pittsburgh, I can see them losing one of those games.
See, I'm not willing to give you the at Jets yet. I'm not.
What? Jets aren't going to beat him, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I'll pick the Patriots that week, but I won't be surprised if the Jets win. How's that?
What?
What?
They're wretched, Mike.
What?
No, the Patriots are winning that game.
They lost. They got killed by the Bills.
Yeah, but you can't use the transitive property.
With Matt Barkley, who was playing golf.
I still sort of like him at Pittsburgh if we're playing that game. That matchup.
But how can you pick it, Mike? I mean, nobody can predict these wins and losses.
I'm not picking it. I'm just saying.
I think they're losing one time in those four. Maybe
Maz, how can you pick it? How can you pick their wins and losses? Nobody can predict it. Why bother?
How's your office pool, Maz? When did you get out of your office
pool? You're out of your office pool, Maz, and you're lying if you say you're still in it.
I got bounced when Minnesota lost to Buffalo.
Don't look at me like I'm some idiot. You lose too, big boy.
Clip it, Jimmy. He's picking the Jets.
The Jimmy character is still my favorite.
How could you pick it? How could you pick it, man?
Oh, he's so angry.
He really is.
Oh.
Greg Bedard, as you heard there, was also in today for his normal weekly appearance. Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal. He does the 10 questions segment as well. Here we go. Here is the recap.
Lips smacking, hemming and hawing. Yeah, here he is.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Con man?
Con man.
Con man?
Con man.
Con man.
Con man.
Con man.
Con man.
What former Patriots player still in the league would you like back in New England? Name one.
Akeem Hicks.
Hicks is the answer. Maz, I'm not going to let you answer.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Number nine, are the Steelers for real, Greg?
No. No, they're still, I mean, you know, no.
Number eight, are the Bears for real? The Chicago Bears. So that's it. It begins and ends there?
Yep.
Number seven, who should be the 2019 starting quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
I'm throwing a Felger and Maz draft dartboard thing here because I don't know. I don't watch these college kids.
So you're saying a college kid?
Yeah. What else are they going to do?
Well, it's number six. Number six. Who would you rather have as a backup quarterback? Mark Sanchez or Colin Kaepernick?
Kaepernick. He'll infuriate your a-hole.
Who's the biggest tool bag team in the league right now?
Steelers.
Yeah, Pittsburgh.
Between Roethlisberger and Tomlin. Did you see his post-game interview? Like,
yeah.
Really?
Have any conspiracy theories on why that Condi Rice rumor was leaked?
I have two possible conspiracy theories. One, somebody hates Jimmy Haslam. The other thing is, maybe somebody said it, and... Yep.
If you're redrafting 2016, what is your order?
Ramsey.
So Ramsey would go first overall?
Yep.
Oh, you idiot. I've asked this many times before, but let's reset given current conditions. Who would you like to be the next quarterback of the New England Patriots?
Marcus Mariota.
Oh, my God. You can't be serious. What, Blaine Gabbert's not available? Carson Wentz. I went
what?
Wentz.
Jesus Christ. Come on.
I don't have an answer for you, then.
Oh, okay. He got amped over that. Your Blake Bortles answer more than anything else.
But I would like the folks at NBC Sports Boston to send me the video clip of Bedard gesticulating and throwing his arms.
He was angry.
Because I would like to put it on our Facebook page.
Angry fellow there. Real quick, Christmas in the City is back. Our fundraising efforts will once again kick in for Christmas in the City. In case you don't know what this is, ChristmasInTheCity.org gives you all the details you need. But to sum up quickly, it gives Christmas. It brings Christmas to kids who don't know what Christmas is, who don't ordinarily get Christmas. Homeless kids, shelter kids, foster kids, etc. In fact, Christmas in the City throws this amazing party a Saturday before Christmas at a convention space in Boston that is massive with thousands of kids from all the shelters, a lot of the shelters, a lot of the foster homes in the Boston area. They come and they have a huge party. There's not just food and drink and Santas and rides, but they have all the things for the mothers of these kids, hairdressers, donate their time, and they will do the hair of the mothers, and they will give the dinner, and they will give the best thing they do is Jake Kennedy and his people actually go around to the shelters, find these kids, and get Christmas lists from them. Again, these are kids who have no idea what it is to write Santa a list and get Christmas presents, and Jake and their people actually take the time to go around to these kids and get a Christmas list and then try as best as they can to fulfill at least some of the items on their list. So when those kids show up that day, they get from Santa what they asked, which is, for us, standard operating procedure, right? But for these kids, they've never experienced it. So that is Christmas in the City in a nutshell. ChristmasInTheCity.org for more information. Now, what we're doing on Thursdays to December 6th, we are doing a broadcast from the Seaport Hotel, which is prior to their annual fundraiser. So they take toys, but they really need cash. That's what they need. So the Seaport on December 6th, starting at 6 p.m., they will have an annual fundraiser that evening. So come by and donate what you can and support the cause as you can. We will be there from 2 to 6, maybe even a little bit longer. Then on December 8th, that Saturday, Maz and I will appear live at Newbury Comics from 2:30 to 4:30. We do this every year. We go to Newbury Comics at the Natick Mall, and we meet and greet. Maz takes pictures, shakes hands, because he loves mingling with the people. And we take your toy and monetary donations.
I believe Murray's going to try to join us too, correct?
Yeah, I'll come right after the Gaspar Murray.
Murray comes, the Stewart comes, Landing, the whole show shows up. So join us for that. Then we will also have an online auction at 985thesportshub.com from Monday the 10th to the 14th. Bid on great items like a Troy Brown signed football, Bruins team signed stick, framed Julian Edelman photo from the Boston Globe, and Felger and Maz show sit-ins. Now, we're doing something different this year. We're not just going to auction off a sit-in, but you can actually do a segment with Felger and Maz with your takes, with your analysis, with your commentary. So come in, do a segment on whatever you want. Take us on. Do your own thing. Take calls. Talk about badminton, soccer, the Bruins, the Celtics, Tom Brady, or whatever. You can host a segment. You can be a co-host. You can take calls. You can read emails. It's your segment.
Of course, we might put some of those takes through the Felger and Maz process.
We will definitely be there to do something with them, but it's not just a show sit-in. These are appearances. These are Felger and Maz on-air appearances, and we'll tell you more about these as we go forward. So there's your Christmas in the City spiel. We'll tell you more about it as the days go forward, but the fundraising has begun. And so ChristmasInTheCity.org for more details. Now, Jones, quickly, what do you got coming up next?
Well, we have a five-hour program, so lots to get to on the show tonight. We'll start with the, the nationally televised game last night, the Monday Nighter Chiefs and Rams. I didn't even think the defense was that bad in that game and what it means for the Patriots. So we'll start there.
Beauty, Arcan, you ready for it?
Oh, yeah. Can't wait.
Okay, always. Arcan and Jones coming your way next. 90 seconds, no commercials. We're back at it tomorrow at 2 for the getaway day. Look forward to it, Maz. We'll see you then.
See you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.